Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming. I think this is our last scheduled meeting of the Transportation Finance Committee, so we'll have some comments about that later in the show. We have a few bills, and I hope we can get through them all today. Representative Anzels, we're going to go a little bit out of order. Or no, he's number one, five on the agenda. We'll have the Simonson bill later. So welcome to the committee, Representative Anzels. I didn't realize that you have a little Ukrainian heritage.
One half.
Okay. Well, good. Well, welcome to the committee. The context for this, members, is that I have a friend from the Ukraine that sent an article in the Washington Post, and it's actually, I just made the mistake, it shouldn't be the Ukraine, it's Ukraine.
Ukraine, yes.
So don't use the before to modify, okay? So we learn new things in the Transportation Finance Committee. Representative Anzels, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be here for the first time this session. I have House File 2708, which was brought to me by the Minnesota Timber Producers Association. And the Minnesota Timber Producers Association represents people involved in the forestry economy in northeastern Minnesota. And what this bill does for the logging concerns in northern Minnesota is that it would better align permits for trucks, over-the-road trucks carrying wood products. It would align their permit applications with their expiration dates on the vehicle's registration. Streamlines the process, makes it easier for owner-operators with these large truck fleets to compete and to handle their responsibilities in terms of licensing. That's the bill.
Okay. Well, thank you, Representative Anzels. Before we get to questions, I just wanted to let the committee know that I'm going to move House File 2708 to the Ways and Means Committee. Members, there's several of these bills that we voted on in incorporating in our larger finance bill yesterday, and it's unclear to me whether those will need to travel separately, and so we did it just as an insurance that we have it in two places here. That's common practice. So I don't recall any controversy around this yesterday. But I'll yield for any members that want to ask Representative Anzels questions. Is there any discussion to House File 2708? Seeing none, I will, excuse me. Okay, I apologize. Apparently there's an A2 amendment. Mr. Scheer, are you?
No.
Okay. Okay. Apparently there is an amendment. Were you aware of that, Representative Anzels?
I was not.
Okay. Who is bringing this amendment to the committee? The A2?
It makes internal.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members, this amendment adds in internal references that clarify that proportional rates would apply to a couple other of the special permits. So this is a technical clarifications. These provisions are included in the delete all amendment that was discussed last night to House File 3260 as well.
Representative Anzels, do you want to take some time to look at this or get some clarity? I apologize, this just was placed in front of me. So my understanding from counsel is apparently this is a technical. It doesn't change the overall intent and policy of the bill, but
Mr. Chair, I apologize. This amendment looks to me like it gives clarity to prorating the fees as we merge dates and filing fees and so on. So this is a good amendment.
Okay.
Makes the bill even better.
The old makes a good bill even better. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want staff to clarify for me that it does this expand the scope of this bill at all?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, it doesn't expand the scope. There's a provision that's already included in the bill on prorating the permit fee down. This adds in cross-referencing to clarify which prorated fees that would apply to.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Let's adopt the amendment, actually, unless there's any further discussion about it. So I'll move the H2708A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. I'll renew my motion now that House File 2708, as amended, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Okay. Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I apologize for the confusion.
No, that's okay. And I'm glad that you were able to get to this committee. Representative Simonson. Welcome to the committee, and I wanted to, we're going to re-refer your bill also to Ways and Means, so I'm going to recommend that House File 2728 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. That is the motion before the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I think in the interest of time, I'll just have Ms. McCormick is here to talk about the content of the bill, and I'll just turn it over to her.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services with the Department of Public Safety. And these provisions, the first one deals with a motorized bicycle or moped and a permit fee. Currently, we have a permit fee that costs $9.75 for 3 years, and what this provision would do would be to eliminate what we have now as the first year. It's a one-year operator permit, and then you can renew that and get the a second permit the next year, and then that would be valid for until you're 21. And what we are doing is we're setting the fee for $9.75. It will be for 3 years. It will be a tamper-proof card, and will have the photo on it, and so this is the what we're requesting is the authority to be able to issue this three-year card. The second one has to do with the CDL learner's permit. This is a requirement of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. Right now, we just have a paper permit that we issue. This would be a tamper-proof permit. And this sets the fee for $2.50 for this permit, for learner's permit for commercial driver's licenses. And then in addition to that, the applicant would pay the $8 filing fee that's required for all cards. The third provision deals with commercial driver's license federal conformity. And this provision is to allow the department to ensure that that Minnesota is keeping in compliance with federal regulations. Federal regulations require that if we do not stay in compliance with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, there can be a 4% penalty fee to the transportation fund, which amounts to about $26 million. And in general, we're only citing one part of the regulations we're talking about. Within the FMCSA, regulations, and those are the ones that include disqualification, notification requirements, and record keeping from the department. So those are the three provisions in the bill. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Questions of Ms. McCormick? Representative Earhart and Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I opened your bill here, and I wanted to ask about the enhanced Minnesota ID card. It happens to be on the list, so I think it's a fair game. Is that the new substitute for the passport ID card, and it allows travel in the Western Hemisphere or certain areas? Would you explain that to me, please?
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, the enhanced identification card is allowed for travel between borders, so Canada and Mexico and the Caribbean area. And that is allowed for individuals if they don't have driving privileges. They would have that card, and you can use that to cross back into the United States, and authorizes you so you don't have to have a passport to do so.
So
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, you said Mexico, Canada, Caribbean, and Central America? No. That's okay if you don't. I was trying to get the scope of it. Yeah.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. McCormick.
Representative Earhart, it's the bordering. It's what it means. It's just the bordering countries. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Yes, Representative Petersburg. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have a quick clarification on the commercial learner's permit. I think what I heard you say is before it was a paper permit and no fee, and now we're going to a plastic hard copy with a $250 fee. Is that correct?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, yes, that's correct. They want something that's tamper-proof and that we can identify the person that's operating the commercial vehicle.
Thank you.
Okay, is there any further discussion from committee members? Representative Simonson, did you want to do any kind of a quick summary here before we vote?
Mr. Chair, it's a good bill, and I would appreciate your support.
Okay. All right. I will renew my motion that House File 2728 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Motion prevails. So
thank you, Mr.
you're on
Chair,
your way to the Ways and Means Committee. Our next bill is Representative Newton, House File 1916. This one was also included last night, but we're going to have it travel separately as well to Ways and Means. This is an opportunity for the committee to hear some important testimony as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll move it. Formally move it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm extremely proud to bring this bill forward. This bill has to do with license plates for our women veterans, and it's something that's long overdue. In Minnesota, we have approximately 30,000 women veterans who are often overlooked, and I have two testifiers here who can explain that. But 15% of the military force now is made up of women. And increasingly, we're going to see more women veterans and more women and more jobs in the military. I know this is in your omnibus bill, Mr. Chair. We also would like to track it so it goes to the General Register. But without further ado, I would like to turn testimony over to Trista Matez-Castillo and Jill Troutner.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Jill Troutner. I live in Maple Grove, and I am an Army veteran. I grew up in northern Minnesota on White Earth Indian Reservation. When I was in high school, I was nominated by the late Congressman Arlen Stanglin to attend the United States Military Academy. I graduated as a member of Class of 93, Defenders of the Free. It was not easy. Following West Point, I served on active duty in Germany in a forward support battalion, and I had the privilege of competing as a soldier athlete with USA Biathlon and Military Biathlon. I made my way home to Minnesota and the Red Bull Division. I got to serve as a company commander with the 34th Infantry Division, and like so many in Minnesota with the Red Bull Division, I deployed. Looking at me and my fellow and veterans, you wouldn't know we were servicemen or women. There's nothing to distinguish us from our fellow citizens. And I was shocked when I found out how many Minnesota women are veterans. More than 29,000. The current stat as of a couple months ago was 29,148, according to the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I had no idea so many of us were so invisible. For these women, a woman veteran's license plate is a long overdue acknowledgement. It's respect and dignity, and it's an honor of the service that they have given. It's something visual that cannot be mistaken as a recognition of anyone's service but their own. Everyone notices a veteran's plate, and everyone assumes that plate belongs to a man. For me, this license plate is a statement of value that Minnesota, my state, values my contribution, my sacrifices, and my patriotism in a highly visible way. And that's a way that is going to eliminate the need for me to explain that I am a military veteran.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Troutner. Are there any questions? Appreciate your testimony and your service. We have one more testifier. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Trista Mattis Castillo, and I, too, am a veteran. I served a total of 16 years on active duty in the Navy, the Marine Corps, and the Minnesota Army National Guard. I, too, was a company commander, and I worked my way through the ranks. And as Ms. Troutner testified, we often, when you hear the word veteran, you think of someone who looks like Representative Earhart or Representative Newton, who, though they are great veterans that have served our country, as well as Representative Howe, but we, too, are veterans, and this is also the face of a veteran. We've served proudly in every conflict our country has been involved with, alongside our male counterparts. We continue to serve today, and in fact, we're the fastest growing group of veterans in the country are women. So as our male veterans decrease in numbers and our World War II veterans pass away, women are joining at equal and faster rates. So we are going to be the face. Soon, when you think of veteran, it will look like us. Currently, there are 22 veterans license plates, and I'm very well familiar with the unofficial moratorium on new plates, and that many legislators don't like license plates. I will tell you, however, that in this case, it's not a new plate. It's just making the plate inclusive of all veterans. Many of those plates have the symbol of the Minnesota National Guard, which is a Minuteman, very clearly, specifically gender, when our Minnesota National Guard is 20% women. And so we really are looking for an inclusionary plate that tells women in Minnesota and the future of our military that women are valued and that we're equals. And with that value, really shows a respect and can change the culture of the military and the future service of our young women as well. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mattis Castillo. And I appreciate that your clarity on the issue of license plates and your sensitivity to these matters that come before us. And I do agree with you, and that's why we're hearing this bill, is I think this is more of an issue of gender equity than adding a whole new category of a plate. Mm-hmm. So that's why this is before us, members. And are there any questions or comments from the committee? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if there's anybody from the Veterans Department here today.
Anybody from the Veterans Department? Yes. Representative Earhart, did you have I saw you.
I was, Mr. Chairman, just commend these two women for coming forward and working hard at this, because they're going to get their due here.
Representative Holberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe Representative Newton can help. Certainly, This is an important step, and recently I was contacted by someone who was active military, and they stated that many states have plates that say, I'm a member of the Marines or Army, etc. As you were working on this bill, was there any discussion around that type of plate in the state of Minnesota that would recognize those that were active members?
Representative Newton?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, I haven't heard that discussion. However, I know when this bill was brought up in the Senate that we did have MDVA testify in favor of the license plates, as well as Jerry Kaiser, who heads the MAG group, has testified in favor of the plates. So we do have the support of the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't questioning that point. I was just wondering that this was a new issue that was brought to me by a constituent, that other states do this and that they can then recognize as they run into each other in different public places, et cetera, that they were in the same branch. So,
Mr. Chair, I might suggest that we'll probably be coming forward with a proposal for new license plates. There seems to be no end.
Mr. Chair, representatives, as someone who's PCS'd a few times, normally you have a post sticker, and so you do know each other, but if you are moving throughout the state, but you PCS so frequently, sometimes every 2 years, that's a whole another ball game, I think. For me, PCSing, if I'm trying to move a family.
Change of station.
Thank you. I was for us civilians. Ms. Trautman, us civilians.
I apologize.
That's okay.
But just trying to get your vehicle through DMV in another state and knowing that you're not going to be there, and you're generally under a lot of pressure and time crunch and training, that would almost be a luxury that I can't even imagine. It would be a wonderful thing, but I think we're concerned about women veterans in the state. And since we don't have any major active duty installations like Fort Hood, I think that's, if I were in Texas, that would be a more valuable advantage.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any additional questions for either Ms. Trautman, Ms. Mattis Castillo, or author Representative Newton? Discussion to the bill? Okay, great. Then I will renew my motion that House File 1916 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Okay, Representative Newton, I guess you can stay there if you want. Thank you to the testifiers. Somebody. I think that this isn't a. This isn't an issue with a cell phone. Okay.
CIA.
Glad that stopped. Representative Newton, this looks like House File 2201 can go to the General Register. And so I'll make that motion that House File 2201 be re-referred to the General Register. Can you please explain the bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill was brought forward to me by Mr. David Olson, who's the comptroller for Minneapolis Oxygen Company. And it has to do with when you can put plates, tabs, decals on commercial vehicles. There's a timing issue between the time when these items can be purchased from MDV and when they can be put on the vehicles, and it does create some problems for the owners of fleets of vehicles, such as Mr. Olson's company. So, I would like to have Mr. Olson testify just to explain it, and we do have agreement with MDV on this that was achieved during the hearing in the policy committee.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Newton. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Olson, please state your name and title for the record.
Thank you. My name is Dave Olson. I'm the controller of Minneapolis Oxygen Company. Minneapolis Oxygen Company is a distributor of industrial gases and welding supplies, and this bill is much like that of the timber industry bill in dealing with the permitting process for commercial vehicles. Minneapolis Oxygen Company distributes goods and services mostly in Minnesota, but we also have trucks that cross into Wisconsin more than the 30 miles, so we're required to have EFTA plates on these trucks. And for the trucks that do go interstate and have IFTA permits on them, once we acquire those stickers for those trucks, they can be placed on those vehicles immediately, much like your personal vehicle. For our trucks that are for interstate use only, when we purchase those stickers, they cannot be attached to those vehicles prior to February 15th and must be on them no later than February 28th, no matter when they was purchased. I don't understand what the difference in this process is. These trucks look exactly alike with the exception of the license plates attached to them. For our IFTA renewal process, we get a packet of information from DMV about the end of the third quarter of each year. Once we have purchased the IFTA sticker, it can be placed on the truck no sooner than December 1st. One of the first items on our renewal process is to renew our MCS 150 form, which is our USDOT number, via computer. We literally cannot do this via computer because of the hazardous materials that we haul, and because USDOT has no provisions within its systems to allow us to renew our number electronically. We have to submit our MCS form, which is an MCS 150B form, by a mail or some other ground-based transportation. And because we cannot renew this MCS 150 form electronically, we have to call DMV to get a variance to the law. I want to repeat this. We need to call DMV to get a variance so that we can comply with state law. In my opinion, no one should ever have to call any government agency to be in compliance with state law. I would suggest that with respect to the IFTA stickers and the plating of these vehicles and the renewal of our process, that we should only have to comply with federal law, and that would avoid some of the confusions between current state law and federal law. I'd like to thank everyone for your time and take any questions that you may have.
Okay. Doesn't look like we have any questions. Oh, yes, so Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Maybe this is for the department, Madam Chair, as well. Some of the questions sounds like it had to do with trying to join the two systems together. With our new computer system, will that be alleviated, and is this a short-term fix, or will this fix it altogether?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. Representative Petersburg, this will be alleviated with the new system, but we're talking about trying to so the effective date is in 2016, right? We changed the effective date until 2016. There is no way for us to electronically connect to the USDOT system at this particular time, but that is in our project plans, and that will take place. So that was the reason that we modified the legislation so that we could address it.
Mr. Chair, is it follow-up?
Yes, Representative Peterson. Petersburg.
So then, with that change, then you're comfortable with this change, and there's not an issue from the agency at all.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we are fine with the changes that have been made to this bill, and we do need to follow the IFTA requirements, and that's the December, why you can't be put on a vehicle until December 1st. That isn't our requirements, but we certainly administer, and we want to be able to provide the efficiencies that have been requested.
Representative Mahoney, did you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. And so I just want to clarify, this bill will be dealt with by your new computer system that I think you said comes online in 2017? Hopefully.
Mr. Chair and Representative...
I think he's referring to Minlars, is that correct? I just have to say Minlars.
Chair and Representative Mahoney, we made the change so that we would ensure it would be completed by that time. Certainly, if it's completed earlier, then we would certainly be able to provide, we could come back to the legislature and change the date, or we could change it, we could start introducing that new process. The IFTA system is a sub-project of MNLARS because that system is being worked on by a different vendor that works specifically on IFTA and IRP issues, which are the fuel tax agreement and the international registration system. So we have to connect to the federal USDOT system in order to accomplish these things. So we put the date out so that we would be sure that we'd be able to meet it, but we certainly have talked to Representative Newton in terms if it would be sooner, we could modify it if need be. So,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Representative Newton, I don't know about anybody else in the legislature, but I've spent more time than I really care to this year trying to go through statutes to meet the unsession kind of deals. Have you given any thought to having an expiration date and a date that this language comes out so that 10 years or 25 years or 50 years, somebody is not doing an unsession again to get rid of your language from 50 years ago? That's something you can put in at a later date. I don't want to do that right here, but that's a suggestion that I think you might want to look at. I've done that in a couple of my bills over the last year or two. And
Representative Homney, thank you. You're looking out after future generations of legislators.
You know, as a past legislator said, you know, we need to look at seven generations forward.
Thank you very much. Ms. McCormick, any additional discussion of the bill? Okay. Any concluding thoughts, Representative?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for letting us present the bill.
Okay. All right. With that, we will, I'll recommend, I'll re-refer my motion that recommending that House File 2201 be re-referred to the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Newton, for your two bills. Is Representative Swatsky in the House? Okay.
Good morning.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Swatsky, it's great to see you here, at the veteran of the Transportation Policy Committee. Your bill, I believe it should be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. I think is there a fiscal piece to this, Mr. Rudin? So we're going to go to Ways and Means, and so I'll move that. I'll make that motion, but we have a couple of amendments. There's an A6. Well, let's do this. Let's move the bill, and you can explain the bill, and then we'll deal with your amendments. Is one an author's amendment? Do you want to? Is this an amendment to get the bill in the shape you'd like us to consider it in? A6.
No.
Mr.
Chair.
Okay. All right. So we have two amendments to this bill, and we'll deal with those after you present the bill, Representative Swatsky, and we discuss it. So welcome to the committee again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Mary Swatsky, and thank you for hearing House File 2214. This is a bill from MnDOT. It's a housekeeping bill, and I'll just let Eric Wadeen walk through the sections that you need to hear, and we'll proceed as it goes.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Wadeen with MnDOT Government Affairs, and I'll just run through the bill very quickly. Did you want me to just focus on the provision that has the fiscal impact, or should I go through the entire bill?
I think in the interest of time, let's just deal with the fiscal issues here.
Mr. Chair, then that would be on, find it here, it's the extension of the Non-Motorized Transportation Advisory Committee, which is in Section 17 of the bill. This committee advises the commissioner about pedestrian and bicycle issues on the trunk highway system, and it is currently scheduled to expire June 30th of this year. We're proposing to extend that for an additional 4 years. This committee does valuable work, and so we're not proposing to make it permanent. We think it's appropriate that it undergo a periodic review to make sure that their work is still necessary. So we're proposing a 4-year extension. This does have a $6,000 cost annually to the Trunk Highway Fund, and those expenses are to reimburse members from Greater Minnesota for their travel expenses to the meetings.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Udine, are there any other provisions that you would like us to focus on?
Mr. Chair, I believe that's the only provision that has a fiscal impact. That's
okay. Are there questions from members? Okay. We're going to give us the good housekeeping seal of approval. I think it's hilarious that we call these bills housekeeping bills. But anyway, that's that's what it is. There's a couple of amendments. I don't know who is planning to present these because they're not author's amendments.
Mr. Chair?
A6, so that's you, Representative Johnson?
Yeah, I'd like to move the A6 amendment.
Okay. It is moved. Please explain the amendment.
Well, the amendment, Mr. Chair and members, the amendment seeks to really explain how folks ride bicycles in the roadway. And so it would clarify, instead of saying as practicable to the right-hand curb or edge, which is, I would argue, confusing, to ride in the right-hand lane when available, then available for traffic. And that's the key thing here. That's the way I ride a bicycle. That's the way my neighbors ride a bicycle. And that's also the way that bicycle-friendly North Mankato has designated on the roadway. In fact, in front of my, on Lake Street where I live, where they designate bikes should go. So I think it's a practical amendment.
Okay. Representative Johnson, this doesn't contradict anything that Representative Kahn was putting forward with us in the past. I'm just teasing
Mr. Here. Chair, I have no idea.
Yeah. I think that was for Representative Beard's benefit here. I did look to you, Representative Beard. I know sometimes you like to comment on these bills.
Mr. Chairman, yes, for the good of the committee and for a genuine concern about public safety. I'm remembering the conversations we had last year about modifying some of the bicycle rules, and I tried to restrict those just to the city of Minneapolis or the first class or something, so that the rest of us would continue to ride our bikes in the way that the neighbors expect us to. And I'm thinking the highways in my district, Mr. Chairman, as we rebuild them, of course, we're putting 8 and 10 foot shoulders on them, which is where we expect the bicycles to ride. There are some of the bicycle purists, however, who insist on riding right down the middle of the lane so that when you overtake them, you actually have to make a complete pass and go completely into the far lane and so on and so forth, which just strikes me as an unnecessary safety burden on the motoring public who actually paid for the road. And this is getting to be a bigger issue. Mr. Chairman, I'm reminding of last spring, riding to this place to work in my car, which has a heater and an all-wheel drive and is safe to drive in a snowstorm, and coming up to a rolling traffic jam on County Road 42 through Savage, where there was our loyal bicyclist in a blinding snowstorm pedaling right down the right lane, right in the middle where he's legally entitled to be, causing havoc for all the neighbors trying to get around him. And oh, by the way, there's a perfectly good bike trail right beside County Road 42 that he could have been on as well. But nonetheless, he is asserting his legal rights as much as it inconvenienced everyone else and actually put himself in jeopardy. And oh, by the way, if you're in a car and you hit a bicyclist, your first call should probably be to your lawyer, maybe 911, and then your lawyer. They should be in speed dial. Because of the way we're reconfiguring the rules here, the rules of the road, once again, I could give you the chat about rights of way and why rights of way evolved over the years like they did, and it has to do with safety, folks. But putting bicycles on particularly rural highways smack dab in the middle of the lane when they could be riding on the shoulder or to the right side of the lane to minimize the pass for the automobile traffic just strikes me as counterproductive. But what we're actually trying to do is encourage people to bicycle and stay alive while they're doing it. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask that we not adopt this amendment, that we would actually vote no. Thank you.
Okay. I would I'd like to see what Mr. Grilly has to say about that, as well as the amendment. Before I call on him, Okay. So, yeah, for members of the committee who may be new, this has been an ongoing issue here, but I think it's a healthy conversation to have. And I would just say, Representative Bridian, we have bicyclists and drivers that both can be a little smarter at times. Mr. Grilly.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dorian Grilly. I'm with the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. And we suggested this amendment because the Minnesota Statute 169.222, operation of a bicycle, was written in the 1970s, and things have changed. And in particular, the language "as far to the right as practicable" has evolved into meaning "as far to the right as possible." And drivers are expecting bicyclists to be riding inches away from a car door, which could swing out and hit them at any time. As noted under subdivision 4, section 4, or number 4, when operating a bicycle on the shoulder of a roadway, I think most bicyclists would choose to ride on the shoulder if there is a paved shoulder. But if there's not a paved shoulder, again, this language has evolved into meaning that the bicyclist should ride on that white line without any room for error, which means they could fall off the edge into the gravel and swerve back out in front of a motor vehicle. So that's what we're after here. We reached out to the National Conference of State Legislatures, and yes, they do have a bicycle policy expert, and asked them for language best practices, and this is what they suggested. It's been enacted in Colorado and a couple other states. And I think it should be enacted here because cities like Winona and Grand Marais and all over the state are signing their streets that bicyclists should ride 4 feet out from the car doors, and some have signs that say bicyclists take the full lane because that's the safe thing to do. One example is the Marshall Avenue Hill going down to the Mississippi River is signed with bicyclists take the full lane. So I would encourage you to adopt this amendment. I think it'll make things safer. And Representative Beard, I will work my best to, we are in the business of bicycle education and trying to teach bicyclists to be safe on the road. We will do our best to teach them the rules of the road and how to be good citizens and utilize users of our transportation system.
Before I call on Representative Holberg, I just wanted to make a couple of comments just on process here. It seems that you're getting at some of the issues that Representative Beard is concerned about. I think it's a good amendment, but I really do want, and I'll support it, but I have to say this is far preferable that this bill would have been introduced and sent to the policy committee where we could have had a more thorough discussion about it. I think really expands the scope of a housekeeping bill, even though, you know, it's from the 70s and all of that. And you know, I understand ideas and issues come in, and you know, they don't meet deadline, et cetera. But I just really want to say for the record that I think this does expand the bill. I'm going to support it, but with a caveat that really I would just encourage all stakeholders in the future a bill like this ought to really go and have a proper debate and hearing and policy. But Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would agree 100% with you, and I don't know if it's a typo on line 7 where you have the word "then" instead of – maybe it should be when available for traffic. But more importantly, you have changed on line 12. The discretion is up to the judgment of the cyclist instead of the law enforcement official. So you allow for the cyclist to make the judgment on whether or not they think their behavior is safe, which is kind of unprecedented. I really believe this is a policy committee issue. It really doesn't belong in a housekeeping bill, and I think there's issues with how the language is written.
Representative Beard, and then Representative Clark, Representative Johnson. I'm doing the Mr. Representative Bernardi deal here, but Representative Johnson after Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, he is the representative with two last names. It confuses me, too. I'll just make the statement regarding Mr. Dorian's comment about the 70s. The one thing hasn't changed since the 70s, members. Automobile fuel taxes, registration fees, and license fees pay for the roads. Bicycles didn't pay for the roads in the 70s. Here we are in the 2010s, and guess what? The roads are paid for by the user fees from gas tax, license tab fees, and registration fees. Bicycles still do not pay for the roads. Part of the leakage in the Trunk Highway Fund is we've now incorporated or mandated MnDOT and the county highway departments to expand shoulders and use gas tax money, highway money, to widen the shoulders and do things to accommodate bicycles in the name of public safety. That's probably a good thing to do. But riding in the middle of the lane is like rubbing our nose in it, in my opinion, because bicycles are still not paying for the highways. The automobiles and the trucks and the people that use the highway system for commerce have paid for the lanes. The bicycles have not. That's the same now as it was in the 1970s. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to not make any more remarks, but thank you.
Representative Johnson, do you want to have any...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to, this is the way people ride. I've ridden a bicycle for a long time. This is the way I ride. This is the way my neighbors ride. And it's also what I think drivers, certainly in my community, and I would expect most communities, expect the rider to do. There's a lot out in the countryside. There's a lot of two-lane roads that only have 1 foot of tar on to the right of that right lane. And so you are forced onto the road. And, you know, I've ridden really hundreds if not thousands of miles in this fashion, and I find it safe, and as a judgment of the cyclist, that's the judgment I make and bicycle riders make, and I think car drivers expect. So I think this is a good amendment.
Okay, any further discussion of the Representative Mason.
Mr. Chair, I think this does go to policy, so I'm going to be voting on it, not because I object to it, but I really think we need to look at it in policy first.
Okay, is there any further discussion? Representative Metza.
I concur with Representative Mason, Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, Representative Earhart.
How do we do this at this juncture?
Well, that's Mr. the question. I'm going to be voting yes. If the committee doesn't want to support it, I understand. And we would have to talk to the stakeholders about whether they want to introduce a bill separately, go to rules, et cetera. I'm not aware. I don't know. Have enough context for the urgency of this. But, I would leave it to the discretion of the committee. In terms of where you would like to take this, but Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, and I'll be voting yes on this. We have way too many bicycle accidents, and as Representative Johnson said, this is the way people ride a bike. And we need to make our laws function for the people that actually use the laws. So I'll be voting yes on this particular amendment.
Thank you. Representative Benson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really was sitting back and wasn't going to add on or pile on, but I really disagree that this really needs a lot more vetting in a policy bill. I'm afraid that this is going to cost more, not less. I was coming back to the Capitol last night and driving north on Wabasha, and here was two cyclists right out in the middle lane. And I can't tell you how many cars tried to veer away from those two cyclists who were going, 5-10 mile an hour versus the number of people who were trying to get home, get wherever they're going, and the number of swerves in the other lane of cars behind these two cyclists. And on three or four occasions within a two-block area, you know, we had just about three or four times potential accidents, cars running into cars to get it out of the way from the bikes. But also, precariously behind these were frustrated drivers to have these two drivers just right up behind these bikes. I really think that this needs a whole lot more testimony. I think people understand safety, vehicle safety, bike safety, and I think this absolutely needs to be a no, and it goes back to policy and an ample amount of discussion had. Thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just remembering my times in Europe on two-lane roads, which are not uncommon with many cars and many bikes, and I've always been struck by how compatible they all are. They just sort of make their way in these corridors. They share the space, and you don't get a sense of a difficulty with this. And recognizing the new demographic in this country, that group that we used to think of the car as freedom, and now they think of no car as freedom, that younger demographic is going to be everywhere, and somehow we'll have to make our accommodation to this new way of living and working and moving.
Okay, just before we vote, I mean, I'll just make a comment then as well, since others have. I think that, you know, we have a process issue. However, I think that the temperature rises, I think, unnecessarily sometimes about these bike issues. You know, it needs to be vetted, but I look at this as a safety issue. We want to make the roads both safe for bikers and drivers, and I think this moves in that direction. I understand that the committee may not agree with me on this, but I did want to say for the record that, you know, we as a legislature really do need to address and take more seriously bicycling as not simply a recreational mode of transportation, which many consider it, but as a real legitimate and growing and necessary mix of our multimodal system. So having said that, we're going to take a vote, Representative Johnson, on this. All those in favor of the A6 amendment to House File 2214 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed?
No.
No.
Division.
The chair's in doubt on this one, actually. I haven't had to do this. We're waiting for the last meeting for the chair to be in doubt, but this was a close call. So let's do the ayes first. And this has the nays. Okay, well, there being eight ayes and eight nays, the motion does not prevail. So. Okay, that was fun. Let's go. We have one more amendment, I believe.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Amendment A7.
Okay, Representative Bernardi, to your amendment.
Well, this was actually brought by MnDOT to do some clarifying language of some legislation that got passed last year, and it was part of Representative Quam's movement to have MnDOT look at all their land that they own and take an inventory of it so they could determine what could be sold off. And this language just got cleaned up so that the part about it already had the part about bike and ped facilities need to be analyzed if the land would be needed for that. And this language allows them to look at a portion of property and maybe sell off a portion of it rather than keeping the entire piece of property. And it's pretty basic. Mr. Rudin may want to comment on this legislation.
Okay, Mr. Rudin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there's a similar provision already included in the housekeeping bill, so this is just a small modification of what we were already proposing, and the department agrees that it's a good modification to allow us to sell portions of property and not necessarily entire parcels.
Okay. Members, discussion to this A7 amendment? Representative Beard, you're reaching for the microphone.
Well, yeah, I had my hand up first, but
Thank you,
Ms. Chair. Mr. Dean, this difference between what's already in the bill is just to allow the portion. And
correct, Mr. Chair, Representative Beard.
And Mr. Chair, the follow-up then is on line 1.18 of the amendment. It's also in the bill. We're going to protect this by a mark on the deed. That's a long, long time. Does this mean any piece of property MnDOT ever wants to dispose of, they have to have a restriction on the deed, or is it only those portions that they identify that could be used for bicycle or pedestrian facilities will have a restriction on the deed?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rudin, Representative Beard, the second part of what you said is okay. The case, that it's only those properties that have gone through the analysis and determined that a bike ped facility is feasible there. That restriction would be included for those properties only.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just with the comment that a mark on a deed is a long, long time that's hanging out there. But thank you. That does help clarify.
Okay. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is, when we start talking about marks on deed, is that something that civil law should probably take a look at? And my other question is the question for the testifier would be is, can you explain to me the difference between a piece of property that the MnDOT would have that's normally close to a roadway that would be suitable for a bike path as opposed to one that wouldn't be suitable for a bike path?
Mr. Rudin, you can respond to that policy question. You know, the process question about civil law would maybe defer to counsel on that one. So why don't we'll do a two-part answer here. Mr. Rudin, to the policy question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Howe. The process that the department has implemented and that I think the legislature sort of intended last year was that we would see if the local city, for example, had a plan for a bike or pedestrian facility in that area. If they do, then that would obviously be a property where a bike ped facility is feasible. If they do not, then I believe we would have to go through and make an educated guess as to whether a bike ped facility would be appropriate in that area, looking at, you know, the development patterns in that area or the plan for development in that area. So it's not an exact science, but our transit office has been involved in that analysis.
Using, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Howe.
Using that loose description that you just gave us, I can almost guarantee that every piece of property is going to have a mark on the deed, because without some guidance on how that fits, I don't see how you rule it out.
Comment? Okay. That's just a statement. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just ask some assurances from the bill author that if this does go on and the bill needs to go to civil law, that we'll work through that process.
Representative Swatsky.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, yes, we will work with that together. Thank you.
And again, I'm not sure where we stand with the committees and deadlines here, but I don't know if Mr. Burris has any thought, just advice from your reading of this bill. Do you believe it would need to go to civil law or this amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't have specific advice on that. I would note that the provision obviously talks about deed restrictions, easements, and so forth. It doesn't change regulations of or laws around those types of arrangements with personal property. It's more being pulled in as part of the criteria that MnDOT could use in determining land sales.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you, Mr. Burris. Is there any more discussion to the A6? Or I'm sorry, A7. A6 is still on my mind. Okay, we'll vote on the A7 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Okay, so to the bill as amended, do you have any final comments, Representative Swatsky?
No, Mr. Chair, I really don't have any other than I'm interested in hearing if our young youth are interested in hearing about all this
where are they from?
Travel on our roadways and bike ped paths. So, yeah. But just wanted to recognize our youth here today.
Yeah, and we'll welcome them formally in just a minute. So, okay, any further discussion then? I'm going to renew the motion that House File 2214, as amended, move to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Okay. Thank you for that, Representative Swatsky, and I want to welcome now formally some ninth graders we have from St. Louis Park High School. St. Louis Park High School, the home of the Orioles, and the home of a lot of Southwest light rail controversy. So anyway, we're but it's a great school, and my nephew goes there. He's an 11th grader, and we welcome you here, and as mentioned, we do a lot of work here in our, this is the Committee on Transportation Finance, so you're hearing a lot of discussion about all kinds of transportation issues, very spirited discussion about bicycles and bike safety, that's under our purview, as well as light rail and many other issues, so welcome. All right, yeah, St. Louis Park. Home of the Echo newspaper, where Tom Friedman got his start, little known fact about that. So now everyone knows that you can't say the in front of Ukraine, and you know about St. Louis Park High School. Representative Holbrook, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I would like to move House File 2795 for consideration by the committee.
Yes, and the motion would be to refer it to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I might, I have an A3 amendment, which I believe was just passed out.
Okay.
I'll give a little background.
Sure.
On the issue. And I'm not sure whether the bill summary was included in the packets, but a number of years ago, the federal government enacted the Driver's Privacy Protection Act, which, just like HIPAA, as stated as a privacy act, is really not no privacy act at all, but rather outlines all the ways this information can be shared. And I don't know if you have the bill summary, but you can see in the bill summary document the variety of uses that the federal government said this information could be shared for, and all but marketing or distribution or solicitations which require consent from the data subject. All the rest are available for use for variety purposes, for towed and impounded vehicles, recalls, law enforcement purposes, of course, court proceedings. And so for a long period of time, this information was sold in bulk. We have a variety of users that use this information, from the little guys that occasionally might look up a license plate for an abandoned vehicle on a one or two records at a time, to the big boys like Thomson Reuters, Experian, that actually buy all of this data in bulk and then get automatic refreshes of the database on a regular basis. There have been some concerns about some of the privacy standards, and so in December of last year, the department decided they were going to no longer sell this information in bulk, and we're going to turn it into a subscription service. Well, there was an outcry by those that were used to getting the information in bulk and that it wouldn't meet their business purpose. So the change in this business model, while to my understanding would be enacted to try and address privacy concerns and allow for better auditing of the use of the data, the users of the data are not comfortable that the new plan put in place by the department would actually allow them to conduct the business that they need to do. This would relate to industries like insurance companies trying to track driving records of their insured. So in other words, if you're insured and you receive a drunk driving conviction and your rates would then go up and or be canceled, tracking driving records of school bus drivers, et cetera. And so there was a lot of consternation and not a lot of resolution to the concerns on either side of this equation. And so the bill before you today is an attempt to solidify in law what they're currently doing. One of the concerns by the department is that they didn't think they had the authority to sell bulk sales, and we're going to revert to a $5 per record subscription service, which would result in much higher costs to those that would buy the entire record. Quite frankly, this bill has been a little contentious as it's moved through the process. Those of you that were in civil law probably witnessed one of the worst bill hearings that I've been a part of. Luckily, most of you missed what happened in the hallway afterwards. So we've been trying to resolve this issue. The A3 amendment that I would like the committee to adopt today would put in place, to the best of our ability, their current operating procedures. However, as you all well know, the concerns about privacy and audit are not falling on deaf ears with me, and I do have concerns around that. And I had a very nice conversation with Assistant Commissioner Ellison this morning. I've had informal conversations with the legislative auditor. No legislator that I've spoke to thinks that we should give the department additional money for them to do the audits. The legislative reaction around this issue is that these databases should be audited by an independent third party, whether it be a legislative auditor or the legislative auditor preparing a contract for somebody that does this. So what I have before you today, if the A3 amendment is adopted, is memorializing what's going on now. However, we have committed to continuing our discussions and seeing if there is some way. The governor's office is very committed to addressing issues of audit and security. I don't argue with that, but we have to find a way that works for everybody. And so I would like the A3 amendment adopted in order to kind of set us back to what we're doing now. There's a number of people that are willing to testify on their concerns or issues in this area, but also to be fully informed the committee that this is a work in progress. We will continue to talk and hopefully at some point in the very near future have some level of peace in the valley.
Thank you. Before we adopt the A3 amendment, I wanted to see whether there's anyone from the public that would want to testify either for or against the amendment. Otherwise, we can adopt the amendment and then see if there's public testimony on the broader bill.
Mr. Chairman, what does A3 do? Was that explained?
Do you want to re? I know you went over it initially, but do you want to talk about it again?
Certainly, Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, the A3 amendment puts in place one of the concerns initially brought up is that they had a Chapter 13 problem and that they didn't have the authority. They didn't think they have the authority to sell in bulk. And as we sorted everything out, it became apparent to me that they really had a Chapter 168 problem in that their department is unique in that it's a fee-based department. And we put in law how much they could charge for their various services and products. And this bulk sales issue was not addressed in their 168 chapter. So this would allow some comfort around the ability to sell in bulk and what the rates would be. But again, whether we're going to continue to keep working. The department has certain goals that are not addressed at this time that will take more work, and I'm committed to doing that. So the A3 amendment just gives them the authority to do what they're doing now and have been for years.
Representatives Mahoney and Dean.
Which is, they've been selling it in bulk, and you're just continuing their ability to sell it in bulk until you can come to some agreement.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, that's correct.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbert, so they've determined what they're charging for the bulk right now that they're selling, or because, as you mentioned, we pretty much spell out all the other areas that they charge. So they've determined what that fee should be right now, and at a, should this move forward, would then at some point would we determine what that fee would be in moving forward?
Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, as you'll see in the language on page 2 of the amendment, we freeze them at the rates and fee structure that they were using on January 1st of this year. However, like I said, I am not, I don't have a deaf ear on their desire to have more oversight and or auditing of the use of this data. The users of this data, when you look at the comparative price and what Minnesota is charging relative to other states, there probably is some room for maybe a slight increase in the fee structure that then possibly that additional revenue could be directed to the legislative auditor's office to oversee the function of auditing and oversight of the use of this of these databases as an option that we hope to discuss with the department and the users of the data. But as I sit here today, I can't give you any firm number or figure, but I think that the bill as it sits before you today, I don't believe the governor's office supports, because he wants movement on the accountability provisions in the use of this data. I don't have a problem with that, but I want to make sure that what we put into place is something that is functional for the users of the data systems as well. So, you know, going back to December and everybody getting a letter saying we're changing the way we're doing things, you're going to pay $5 for each individual record, caused the, you know, this huge reaction across companies that depend on this information for their business model. It didn't seem to move in a resolution mode, but I'm hopeful that maybe we can turn the corner on this and make some progress.
Okay, I just a comment. I met with the advocates of this bill and the Department of Public Safety yesterday at about 3 in the afternoon, and I didn't see a way forward at that point. But since then, I've talked to both Representative Holberg and folks at the Department of Public Safety, and I do feel that there is some really good faith efforts to resolve differences that are in process here. And, you know, I'm comfortable moving this to the General Register, provided that those discussions continue and that there can be, you know, some, to the best that we can accomplish, mutual agreement on some language moving forward. There's a lot of challenges ahead, but I think there's goodwill and good faith on both sides here that I've detected since yesterday, that where I think the positions were a little hardened. So I want to thank both the folks at the Department of Public Safety and Commissioner Doman and you, Representative Holbrook, and the advocates for being willing to work this out. So, you know, we can hear testimony, but, you know, it'd be, you know, given that, it's my intention that we'll move this out with that caveat. But, I mean, I'm happy to hear public testimony if we want to take that. Just for the committee, I mean, we, after this bill, and I know there's a lot of interest in this bill, and I want to make sure that those who do want to testify are able to, we have two additional bills on the agenda for today. And I just wanted to say to my friends on the other side of the aisle, on House File 2752, even though it has the words Metropolitan Council and Light Rail in it, it's not terribly controversial, but, you know, it really isn't. But we'll hear that out. It shouldn't take too long. And then we have the unsession bill, which is 3084. So That moved out of policy without a lot of fanfare, but you know, it may be that we have to reconvene after session. We don't have a room yet, but I'm willing to stay a little past 11:30 if needed. But that's what we need to do yet today. Some public testimony if it's needed today on this bill, and then these two other rather non-controversial, but one never knows, bills that we have to get through. So with that, are there any members of the public that would like to testify either for or against Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Holberg. If I understood the issues from before, it was not only just that it was going to more of an individual request for data, but that the amount of time available for accessing that data was also being restricted, in which, for those of you that have been plagued with insurance agents coming after hours when you really are at home, it makes it more difficult for them if they don't have opportunity to get the information that they can achieve instant quotes when they're talking to individuals as well. So that is also another issue that this will correct. Am I correct in understanding that?
Well,
Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Petersburg, part of the problem is that the proposal by the department has been evolving as they've been hearing feedback from the users of the information. So I'm not sure exactly where we are on the time constraints of the access to the data in the last proposal, but certainly it would be something that we'd address as we move forward in making sure that whatever business model is adopted by the department would allow for the ability to access data in a timely manner to allow basic business functions to continue.
Okay. Additional comments? Okay, a couple things I'd like to do. I did learn that the legislative auditor has been tracking this as well, and I don't know, we could call on him for some brief thoughts. But we do need to address this amendment, so I'd like to do that first. The A3 amendment, is there anyone from the public that wants to testify either in favor or in opposition? Okay. Representative Hausman.
Were you going to invite the auditor up?
Yeah, it's not to the A3 amendment. No. Excuse me? Okay. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Is there additional public testimony besides just hearing quickly from the legislative auditor? I want to get a sense of planning our time for this.
Mr. Chair, unlike when I was in room 10 in the Civil Law Committee and they were all behind me,
yeah,
supposedly shaking their heads yes, which then fell apart,
yeah,
I can see them
now
in this room, and I see them shaking that they don't feel that they need to testify. But I think that the legislative auditor's brief perspective on this may be helpful.
I thought so, too.
And so I know that we want to wrap up and not come back after session. But
Whenever Mr. Nobles is in the room, I think we want to hear from him.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm legislative auditor. Excuse my voice. I've been testifying before a number of committees. Mr. Chairman, this has become a very contentious issue, and there is a need to balance various interests here, as there often is with these issues. I want to just remind you that last year we issued this report on law enforcement's use of the same databases that we're talking about today. And we, frankly, were very critical of the Department of Public Safety and many law enforcement agencies for not taking data privacy seriously enough. And I have to say, sitting here today, there's been quite a sea change, both in local law enforcement agencies and at the department. And so I think that the caution and concern they bring to this issue is well justified. But I think the really important thing for you to know is not only did law enforcement agencies and DPS receive criticism from the Office of the Legislative Auditor for their handling of the security around this data, but many citizens, many of your constituents, received letters. Mention was made of the letters that went out to the business interests who want this data. Well, many hundreds and thousands of letters went out to citizens, your constituents, when there was a conservation officer who looked at some of the data that we're talking about And these people felt like their data, their privacy had been violated, and many of them were very shaken and scared about what this gentleman was up to in looking at their driver's license pictures. The state of Minnesota took swift and decisive action against that man. He was fired, and he was criminally prosecuted, and he recently pled guilty. So much has changed in state government and in local government on taking these issues more seriously. I think what the department is saying is, what's going on once this same data goes from the government into these private businesses? Do they have the same level of monitoring and concern? Will they impose the same kinds of sanctions and actions on people who violate the terms and conditions of the use of this data? This has become a very widespread problem. As I was walking over here, one of my employees said, I got one of the letters from Health Partners. Many of you know now Health Partners has had a data breach, and maybe some of you and some of your constituents are going to receive that letter saying there's been a breach of your data. I think the concern that the department has is, what's going to happen when one of your constituents gets a letter saying that there was a data breach at Thomson Reuters, and the data that they got in bulk, that there was a data breach, and now that issue comes back to the state? I think there is a way to work this out, and I'm going to work with Representative Holberg, the business interests, the department, to try to find a way to do that so that we can find the proper balance. But the department, frankly, has gotten a lot of criticism and a lot of pushback. I think, frankly, they are trying to at least raise reasonable issues. I think the challenge now is to find a reasonable solution. But I think, frankly, the department has raised very reasonable, very appropriate issues, not only to protect their responsibilities, but yours as well as the legislature.
Thank you very much. We have a couple questions. I appreciate that summary. I think you really, crystallized what the issues are on both sides of this and provided a way forward. So that's very helpful. I think I see Representative Hausman, Earhart, and was it Mason? Okay, so let's start with you, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, when you said you wanted to work with Representative Holbrook, are you saying that this, that the legislation before us is not quite ready yet, or what? How are we interpreting that?
Mr. Chairman, members, I think what I'm saying is that if legislation is going to be enacted and signed by the governor, it's my understanding that there's still work to be done. I personally don't take a position on this legislation and whether or not the state ought to continue the bulk sale of this data. My interest and concern is trying to give you, the legislature, and the executive branch some insights how we might be able to reach some comfort level with the kind of auditing that is going on in these companies. I have in my office a data security team of auditors. They have experience working not only in government, but in the private sector as well. The manager of my data security team came from Deloitte. So they have a good understanding of the level of auditing that can go on by some of these IT security firms. And so I will have more discussions with the business interests, get better informed about the kind of auditing that is going on in these companies, and try to communicate back to you, Representative Holberg and others, whether or not it seems that there is an appropriate level of auditing, monitoring, and security in these companies.
Thank you very much. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would agree with the summary that Mr. Nobles gave. Yesterday, for the first time, I was called on by DVS, and they are concerned about the security beyond their own walls here, that this data is going to be handled and how it's going to be handled. Today I heard from the other side of the issue, and I think that for the first time that I haven't been in the committees where this has been moving through, and I think that we do need to pause and try and flesh out what either one of the, both sides are professing as the only way to do it. And I would suggest that we accept the auditor's invitation to participate in this and somehow delay this from further action until we get a better agreement from both sides that they are willing to do some bending on it. And I don't know what that is because I don't know anything about security. I just know of data, but I just know a target, and others have. We have too many opportunities for data to be taken out of context and used by people that shouldn't be used by in the modern world here. So whatever we can do to put some security on this, I think we should take the time to do that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Earhart. Agree, but I have a commitment from both sides, and I happen to, have worked with both on this and on other issues, the principles here, and I'm confident that we're not going to take this up on the floor until there's an agreement. But given our deadlines and what needs to happen, and I think some urgency around this issue, and it's up to the committee, but it'd be my preference that we, with this on the record commitment from both sides, which I have attained today, to keep working, and now we have the legislative auditor engaged. I think, I'm comfortable moving this to the register, but not necessarily to a floor debate until we have agreement. So that's just my perspective, and others may feel differently, but I'm comfortable.
Well,
with what's happened here.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask another question. And DBS was in me. Have you agreed to this now? Is that shake your heads yes or no? Or okay. Well, that's what I was wondering because they were a little bit distraught yesterday.
Yeah, no, I agree with Representative Earhart. That's what I was referring to. At 3 o'clock yesterday, I did not see a way forward. So.
Thank you.
So I appreciate the work that everyone has been doing on this. Are there any other questions of the legislative auditor Nobles? Representative Mason. That's right. I'm sorry, Representative Mason. You're on the list. I forgot. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you can comment. I'm just going to make some comments, and if you want to react. First of all, I take data privacy incredibly seriously. And as a state, we ask people for personal information for them to get their licenses, et cetera, et cetera. And so when we're out giving it out, I think we need to take every precaution necessary. And I understand insurance companies need it, or they wouldn't be able to be in business, so I understand that. When it comes to credit rating companies, to me, I'm never sure how they got all the information they do, and I think that's the biggest scam going. But I also received the letter from the DNR, so I am a victim of having a breach taken place. So that's, I guess, I'm willing to vote for this because I know Representative Hallberg looks very seriously, knows a lot about data privacy, but I'm still very, very concerned about who gets to buy this stuff, and I guess somewhere that maybe that might be something we consider. We need to know who is using it, and okay, so it's this insurance company, et cetera, but it shouldn't be out for advertising or for a whole lot of other different purposes. I mean, this should be very, very constrained.
Thank you, Representative Mason. I don't see anyone else on the list, and I don't think there's anyone that wants to testify. So we've adopted the A3 amendment, so I will renew Representative Holberg's motion that House File 2795, as amended, be recommended to move forward to the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed. The motion prevails. I appreciate the work that both sides have done on this. Members, I have talked with our ranking member, Representative Beard, and he's okay with us going just a few minutes over time to get through these two relatively non-controversial bills. So I'd encourage members to stay for just a few more minutes if you can. Apparently you can't, so that's fine. Okay. All right. Before everyone scatters, I actually did want to acknowledge quickly the fact that we have three members that are have announced their retirement from the legislature, and that this could very well be their last Transportation Finance Committee meeting of the year. And so I wanted to thank Representative Holberg, who's been an incredible friend of mine since we first met in 2002. Actually, we met at prior to that when we were on the same side of a dispute with the Met Council, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And you've been an incredible support and friend and amazing member that I think both sides of the aisle respect, your honesty and your integrity, and wanted to thank you for your service.
You.
Representative Beard, we came in together in 2002, and I think you've been also such a strong member of the Transportation Finance Committee. We've served on this committee together all of those years. Tremendous expertise that you bring to the table, and again, your civility and you know, passion for this issue is so appreciated. I've learned so much from you, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service. And Representative Benson, I have not. You're also okay. Good. I just wanted to make sure. Don't want to prematurely retire. But you know, I have only known you these 2 years, and again, you've been a wonderful contributor. And you know, I wish you all the best as well. You know, your expertise, and I think especially your commitment to the issues around the Rochester area. You've brought those to the table here, and I appreciate that as well. So thank you to all three of these retiring members. So with that, Representative Mason, you seem fired up and ready to go. House File 2752 will be referred. I'll move that to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Again, members, we did discuss this a little bit last night, and very quickly, Representative Mason, if you want to go over that, and if there's any confusion, I think Mr. Burris can help out with that as well.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. What this bill does is establishes accessibility criteria for light rail vehicles. It does dedicate spaces for wheelchairs and companion seating. It is supported by the disability community as well as the Met Council. And I will stand for questions.
Okay. Questions for Representative Mason on House File 2752. All right. I think we're ready to go here. All those in favor, I'll renew the motion that House File 2752 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, the motion prevails.
Thank you.
Our last bill of the day, and quite possibly our last bill of the session in the Transportation Finance Committee, will be the unsession bill, amazingly, House File 3084. Never really liked that word, unsession, but that's what we had before us. Last but not least.
Well, hello, Mr. Chair. I feel like I should crack open a Diet 7-Up or something for this bill, but we...
the Uncola.
Yes, right. Thank you.
Mr. Nicely gave me a look. So.
He's too young for that. To know about that,
but. Welcome to the committee. So, House File 3084, I will move to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, so this is the unsession bill, and this has been met with leaders within the Senate and the House, and we've gone through policy, and now here we are.
Excuse me. No, go ahead. I guess, Representative Bernardi, well, there's a lot of policy in this bill, and it was passed through policy. So I guess if you want to, you and Mr. Udine could just focus on the fiscal pieces of the bill.
That sounds like a very good idea, and we'll let
draw a little boundary around the rest of it.
We'll let Mr. Udine begin with that then.
So, Mr. Chair, again, Eric Udine, MnDOT Government Affairs. This bill actually saves the state some money. And the money is saved by eliminating several reporting requirements, and so I'll just highlight those few. Section 1, reporting the number of jobs on state aid projects under $5 million is estimated to save $30,000 every other year. Section 11, eliminating the partnerships report, saves $1,000 annually to the Department of Transportation. Section 14, special transportation service provider complaints, getting rid of that report saves only about $300 annually. And then changing the Safe Routes to School report from an annual report to a report that would occur every other year will save about $2,500 every other year. And so those are the direct fiscal impacts of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Rudin? Representative Metza.
Mr. Chair, that looks just about like the $40,000 I was asking for Floodwood.
You know, Representative Metza, you are, I'm now going to officially declare you a great Iron Range legislator. That's something, I guess, the Ways and Means Committee and the floor can sort through. Okay. Are there any other questions, even comments? Is there anyone that wants to testify on this bill? Okay. Well, with that, then, members, I'm going to renew the motion that House File 3084 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, motion prevails. And as we part here, I also want to thank again our wonderful staff from the our fiscal analyst, Andrew Lee, Matt Burris, our we don't have Isaiah Ellison here, but you know, we have. We will thank him as well, and our partisan staff has always done a great job. So, with that, members, we are adjourned.